Thermal Heating Group, which consists of myself, Jessica, Ryan, and Cheryl. We were looked more at the solar collectors that are on the front of the EAC, which Craig had touched on, where he was talking about the light reflection of it, and what we focused on was the heat that those collectors actually contain, the ductwork that's underneath the building, and how those tie in with the rock storage area. Which is kind of our overview. So the first thing was these air collectors, which there's 15 of them located outside there. They're, I forget the numbers, the total is like 430 square feet of surface area. I think they're like 28 feet, somewhere in there. And the way these work, which actually we'll get into that later. But, so that's where they are. And then Ryan's going to talk about the sun that they receive.
So picking up from the last group, we're looking at the same sort of diagrams. Now, he had covered that in the winter, we're not getting the sun that we need in order to make this work. You're seeing in the coldest parts of winter, we're getting at best 2 hours of partially obstructed sunlight. So that would be much better if they could open that up to get at least 6 hours in the middle of the day. But
guys, I don't remember your slide. I'm sorry. I don't know how to refer to this.
Yeah, we threw it on. Oh, you know what? You save it as differently.
There was two on there. I forget. They were the same size. I forget they're the same one.
Okay, so that's probably what happened.
Sorry. Yeah, okay. So why don't you add them real quick? Because it's too hard to comment without. Thank you.
Press Shift F5 and it will start where we're at. Okay.
Okay, cool.
Let's go to the next slide. One of the next things that we looked at is these panels were installed at an angle. So looking at the logic of why that's at the angle it is. We measured it at approximately 58 degrees, the slope of those panels. And if you look at the normal to that, it is looking at about, just shy of 30 degrees, which brings you into those panels being focused at that winter range of where the sun should be. So that was the logic that they presumably used. A rule of thumb that we found was you take the latitude and you add 15 to 20 degrees, which, since we're at about 42 degrees latitude, they're right inside that range. So that was the logic we found of those panels being sloped to maximize the winter sun profile.
Now, the way these panels work is a thermal cycling system, which Cliff had kind of gave us a quick demonstration of when we were out there the first time, where the cold air comes in from the bottom, it goes between the two planes, and then as the sun hits it and heats it up, the hot air rises and goes up the top, which kind of creates the convection current. So one of the things I had found when designing for this type of system was that you needed about 10 square feet of solar collecting areas for every 100 square feet of floor area of the building that you want to heat. So obviously they have much more than they need to, because they have, like I said before, they have 430 square feet of panels for a building that's under 1,800 square feet. Well, the reason they did that was because of the direct thermal storage, so that way they're collecting more than they need, so that way they can, in theory, store it and then use it all your time. So ideally, they would only need about 7 panels if they were just heating the building and they didn't want to store it at all. So the next question we asked was, is the system actually working the way it's supposed to? So this is a graph on just like an average afternoon day. Here we have the temperature of the rock storage, which you can see is just pretty much straight constant. So that's doing what it should, and that's staying the same. The main thing is the solar radiation, which is this green graph of how it was kind of an overcast day, but I'm sure there was breaks in the sun at some point. So there's peaks where the sun was, there's a lot of sun hitting them, and then there's also low spots. But so the sun was varying, but the temperature of the heat coming off the top of the solar panels, you can see, was greater than what was going in, or like greater than the temperature of the rock storage, so it was in turn ideally heating them up, as well as could be hot enough. But, and you can see that it does differ a little bit, where even though the sun was going down, there's still heat gains coming up the top.
I'm sorry, I'm a little confused. You have different colors. It says 10IF. 10IF, those three are the same?
Yeah, there were
different things.
It was all three up there. It was just labeled as the same sensor because it's the same type of sensor.
So we're actually going to revisit the same data.
Okay,
later.
Figure out what these are different locations. Is that
right? Yes. Exactly.
Yeah, this was a temperature sensor at in the ductwork going into the solar or the rock storage. This is the one inside of the rock storage, and this was the one going into the bottom of the siphons. Is that right?
This one. Coming out of the top of the air collectors is that purple line that's gently slopes down.
What you might want to do is...
Okay, so I had that backwards. This is the one going into the rock storage, yeah. And this is coming out of the rock storage.
That one's in the
going into the building. Okay, yeah.
And also, point out, it's between, 2:30 roughly and 4:07.
Yeah.
And these are the 2 hours where you actually are getting hitting the collector. Is that the reason you pick these times?
That happened, through the course of the year, we happened to wind up with, data collection problems, so we wound up with a snippet of time.
Okay, and that snippet of time within that 2 hours where you do get the fact that these were, these are 12-11, which is pretty close to...
Yeah, so we're December, so we're looking 2:30.
4:07.
To just after 4 o'clock. Mm-hmm. So let's jump back a couple slides.
You need to correlate. And this goes for everyone. You want to pull the data together, and Natasha is be able to talk about how it relates. Here on the time, what 2 hour period was it? You said there were 2 hour periods.
So 2 o'clock is approximately in this range.
Okay.
So the data that we're seeing, the sun should have been roughly from about here, where we're outside of the trees, moving to where it's behind the trees.
Okay, which makes sense from
which
the spot.
Must, right.
It goes down there, assuming it was a sunny day.
Assuming it wasn't overcast, and with the peaks that we saw, we were probably picking up that the sun was going behind the trees during the time of
the day. Right, so you're still getting sun even though it was...
So, on the left side is where it's sunny, but then there's breaks in the clouds where you get more sun, and then it goes behind the trees.
Or perhaps it was picking up some of the treetops.
Yeah, sure.
I want to add labels also. I guess temperature degrees Fahrenheit, dry bulb temperature, right on the left, the dry bulb temperature.
Well, we have several...
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
So our units are on the right, so this gives you a scale that has multiple units. Yeah, because we have the solar radiation on the same graph as temperature, so we had to disassociate those.
Can you put both units? So how are you relating it? I don't understand.
The numbers work out reasonably well in this situation.
Okay.
Where... Okay, the solar radiation in watts per square meter fits reasonably well on the graph with temperature just because those number values are close to the same.
Okay, you need to explain that on the diagram.
Okay, yeah.
It's a double, say it's pretty close.
Well, we put the units with each item.
What's the significance of the range?
This was kind of the raw data. So we started, this is the graph of the raw data that we got.
So you're gonna clean this up.
Well, we have
a presentation.
We have more
graphs. I understand. I know things were very late. I understand that. So I'm being very forgiving on that. But for the next presentation, I'll clean it up a bit.
Yeah, and even the ones later look different than
this
initial one.
Thank you.
So then here we have kind of a cutaway of panel construction of what is happening on the inside of the panels.
So you can see we have a single glass cover. They have a 2x4 spacer beneath the glass cover and the metal panel. The metal panel has those horizontal ribs you can see in the picture on the right. And behind that, there's basically another metal panel. So our air passage flows horizontally through there. That feeds in on that outside edge of the panels and flows towards the center. So it's actually a horizontal airflow behind the metal panels that these operate on. Then behind that system, it's insulated, there's gypsum board, and you're into the basement.
Is there a fan that's pushing it? Because it's going to want to go up. I always thought that...
There is a fan. A fan does exist. The fan is currently sitting on top of other equipment, you know, just disassembled, sitting on a dock.
That's part of the problem.
So we'll see the fan in a little bit.
Yeah. Something else I should share, we don't have any data on what temperatures are being reached in the collector, do we? I imagine they're not real high.
Well, that...
Go ahead.
That was one of the values in the graph, was one of the temperatures is located directly behind, basically at the inlet from the air collector into the rock storage. So we'll see that a little bit later as well.
One thing, and they've known this since the 70s, that sometimes having wood in there after, even though it wouldn't reach the ignition temperature you would need for wood, it dries out, and when it's repeatedly, if this, you know, overheats at all, and it goes into 300 or 400, which it may not for this, I imagine 200 would be working, but if something stagnates, that you don't get the airflow, and it's more efficient than it is right now, you could actually cause that to burn at a lower temperature than you normally catch fire after being repeatedly heated up at lower temperatures.
One area that we didn't really address that we noticed is inside the rock storage, they do have some basically styrofoam insulation. At the top of the rock storage, you can see that insulation has been affected by heat.
Oh, okay. So that's interesting. And I think that should be included in your report. Maybe you already have.
Yeah, we didn't really address that too closely, but it's a good idea.
Who did the drawing here?
I put that together.
If only suggestion would be is you might, if you have time. Don't worry about it if you don't have any time. I oriented it the same angle, so it doesn't look like it's something you pulled out from somewhere else.
Okay.
And it's okay to put your credit now.
Okay.
All
right. So then this is looking more as a section, a simplified section of that air passage. So we have the glass cover, that sealed air cavity, and then these... horizontal passageways go into the center where it feeds into the rock storage area. So this is right at that intersection of where it enters the rock storage. You can see the backside of the panel. It's kind of painted with a gray paint. And that other metal panel basically forms the backside of it. So there's probably a little leakage vertically, but primarily it's a horizontal flow into the center portion to where it goes into the rock storage. And then the rock storage, the air is supposed to flow down and go to the air return, which takes you back to the end of the panel.
I'm sorry, I need one more question. It's hard to tell on the photo. It's not traveling in the smaller part. It's traveling in the larger section, right? Or how is it? Where is the path, the actual path?
Right in behind each of these.
Okay, so it's along that large. You might want to add some arrows or something in there to show.
Okay.
I think that would really clarify it. That's on slide 9. because just looking at that, it's a little bit difficult to tell. You know what I'm saying?
Okay. Let's go to the next slide.
Okay. Then we have some of the current problems with the system. Obviously, it's an age-eating system now. You can see that there's weeds in between the glass panel, which is blocking sunlight directly. The air flows then horizontally instead of going vertically like it wants to. The hot air wants to rise. And then there was a lot of problems with the ductwork where there was just segments of it that were missing, fans are disconnected, and it's really not working at all as far as that standpoint.
Very sad situation, isn't it?
So what can be changed just with the solar collectors? If they make it so that the air is flowing from the bottom to the top, they'll be more efficient. They can cut trees down so that they're getting more gains to it. And if they do all that, and then you can reduce the number of panels that you would need. They wouldn't need to have so many operable. You could just do the ones in the middle that are giving the most sunlight. Resealing and replacing any of the panels that are damaged, obviously, would help a lot as far as the efficiency of the system.
Recoat real panels? Oh, I get you again, because you're only going to use part of them.
Yeah.
Okay. I choose a different word. So
yeah.
Working.
Okay, and then that goes into the ductwork system, which Ryan talks about.
Okay, so this is a little bit a different illustration of looking at how that rock storage, the ducts, and those panel systems are connected together. So you can see at the central rock storage, they have a duct which flows up and around. There's a switch at this location, some dampers, and then flows into, that return air to the air collector, takes it out to the outside of each collector, the ends of the collectors, and then as the air is heated, it moves back towards the center, which flows into the rock collector system. Let's go ahead and go to the next one. Next. So when they're connected to the rock storage, the concept behind that is the hot air flows into the top, it will be drawn through the rock system, and it will flow out the bottom. Underneath the rocks, there's a series of U-shaped blocks, a wire screen mesh, and that's what supports the rock system. So you have an air cavity underneath the rocks, so it's essentially the rocks are suspended, allowing the air to flow through it vertically. So here's some of the disconnected controls and things that we found. Dampers that determine which way the air is going to flow are simply disconnected from the equipment to operate them. The supplemental heat system was removed and is just open to the basement area. Next slide. And here you can see the man door up into the rock storage is simply left open. There's no closure panel for that currently. Over on the left and the right, you can see, here's these large openings in these ducts that are supposed to direct the air through. However, they're simply open. So, there's no way the system can move air in the way it's supposed to. So when they have concerns about it's not operating as efficiently as it used to, there's a big gaping reason why.
I see the blower up there.
Yep. Up at the upper right, you can see the blower fan, which should be connected to the system somewhere, but is not. So.
Okay. I'm going to talk about the rock storage area, how it works. What is it? All materials have some type of heat storage, and you can use different materials. You can use fluids, water, phase change materials. In this case, they're using rocks. How it should work is that basically you pull air through it that's at a higher temperature, and then the rocks will absorb that heat because the rocks are colder. And then as you need the heat, it would be released, and you should have duct work which directs the heated air to where you want it to go. Does it work? No, it doesn't work because their openings, the system is not connected. It needs to be, well, when the system is completely closed, it will pressurize, and then you'll be able to see whether it will work well by natural convection. Because ultimately that's what you want. You want it to be able to work with natural convection and not have to bring in any supplemental energy. What can be changed? Just closing up the system, you'd be able to have airflow, but if you look at this picture and then some more pictures afterwards, okay, the air is coming in here, and right here is where the air exits. So the air is coming in here and it's turning around and it's going out right there. So it is not going through the rocks, and so you have a little bit of absorption of heat on the surface of the rocks, but you're not fully utilizing that whole volume of rocks to store heat. Okay, next. Okay, these are some elementary drawings of mine. I'm just learning how to use the flow. This is, okay, on the west side, there are some more openings. This is an open, just an 8-inch diameter tube is coming out, and air is flowing out of that. We don't know where that leads to. This is a 20-inch diameter, it's a metal conduit, and there's a string. If you pull it, it opens and closes, so apparently they were using that to control something. This is just showing the sizing of it. It's, this is not the updated one, but it's about 3-foot depth of the actual depth of the rock. It's about 3-foot clearance and about 3.7, 3'7" actual depth of the rock. And this is the pipe tubing, whatever that is. This is actually showing, this is like in front of the bin, the opening there, and if you look up in there, you would see there's the mesh and the rock sitting. And this is the number one, and you see the string opening that. And one thing I noticed when we're in there, first, I was a little afraid to go in there because you don't know what kind of asbestos or whatever might be in there with the insulations. But the air was extremely fresh. It was, in fact, very energizing. I felt really good down there. So you've got a lot of fresh air. And I'm wondering if this conduit, if they're doing something with ground coupling. Because, I mean, it's a very long conduit. For the freshness of the air, it just didn't seem like that was being supplied by that little bit of air coming out of the solar panel. So some may be coming in there. This, the air flows here, the airflow is going out.
So looking at that number two item that had a high airflow going out, we haven't truly determined what it was. But before we mentioned that a supplemental heat system has been removed. Well, one thing that we didn't see was anywhere for the exhaust for that system to go. So I'm suspicious that this duct may be a disconnected exhaust pipe. The supplemental heat was on the east side of the building, and there's a chimney on the west side. So what I'm wondering is if this pipe was intended to go across the rock storage, allowing that heat, that furnace, to exhaust over towards the chimney. You can see that, you know, the insulation and any combustible materials have been moved away, and this is an insulated type duct. So I'm suspicious that we may have, you know, an exhaust, a line straight out to the chimney that's just sucking air out of the system.
It's a neat deduction on it. Can you think of ways of being able to tell where the air might be going? Any ideas on how you might do that?
A fog. If you put some sort of smoke system.
Colored smoke.
Another way is, you know, they have various duct cameras that you could run through, look and see if, you know, what's on the other side of this pipe.
I wonder how expensive it would be. Maybe rent one. You can rent one.
You have me borrow it from work.
Oh, sounds good.
Whenever we went out there, we didn't have, you know, all our time was used up just trying to get done what needed to get done, and I didn't have opportunities to, you know, bring additional
equipment. You're welcome to come to the next class and visit as often as you'd like.
There's a couple items. Another would be to see if we could get plans, because I'm sure.
There was the other question I wrote down. Did you talk with the architect about this particular system? Have you met with the architect? Has anybody met with the architect directly in this class?
What's that?
Wayne
Appleyard was one of the designers. Troy had met with him, and Troy actually mentioned that they're planning on having Wayne Appleyard back out there at some point, which...
Great. You know, need to coordinate that. And again, if you guys want me to, I will keep you on... I wish there was some way I could keep you on Blackboard. I don't know if they'll let me do that. Although you won't be able to log in if you're not in. Is everyone taking classes next semester? Anyone not taking classes next semester? I wonder if there's some way. I think we can have guest privileges. Let me see. I mean, if you want to, I think that you've done a lot, and I think you might want to see where it goes and maybe have some input on that. I'll try to do it. I may run into some political, you know, problems doing that, but I can see you wanting to. I know I would want to, you know, see what was going on, what was done in the work that I started. So I'll do the best I can. You're welcome to come in anytime. You might check with me to make sure where we're at in our physical location, though. And there is an updated version, you said, of this. We probably got the wrong one.
Yes.
Okay, so make sure I get that one. Okay. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Okay, next one. Okay, this is showing that an opening the same size, the 8-inch diameter, and it, like Ryan was saying, this may have been where the pipe was, because this is just an opening.
Okay.
There's no pipe there.
Is that on the other side
of
the other hole?
Yes.
That kind of makes sense.
Gently sloping up from the area that furnace would have been, you know.
Only a gentle, because usually it's bad to have exhaust close. You want it vertical because you can get creosol and fires can start, you know, having it at an angle like that.
Wow, it's a gentle slope.
That's interesting. Okay. Is that a wire across there?
No, that's my elementary drawing attempt.
No, below the picture. So what's the white thing going across? Is that a wire or a conduit?
There were a number of unexplained wires running throughout.
Okay.
Most likely the systems that were originally in place to operate various things. But, I mean, you know, there's heating portions that you'll see. There's, you know, electrical wires that you'll find. So things are not nearly as closed up. But I think anything down there was... nothing high voltage, just like low voltage type wires to connect to things.
And I know you have your key and you're showing the photographs, but whatever you think something is, if you could actually state that too. Okay. You know what I mean? I know you're talking about it, but in the report,
We think this is the same day, or we have confirmed that this is. You okay? You want some water?
No, we're just trying to.
Okay. This is four. Here and here is the building supply ducting where, well, if you see the rocks here, so the air is coming in here and it's flowing out there. So this is where it up then?
Yes, there's a number of smaller branches off of that.
Is that where, just after you called the Great Room, if you're going from the Great Room into the hallway, there is a vent there that they cover up.
That vent is actually in the top of the rock storage.
Okay.
So I don't think these pictures show it.
There won't be a picture that where it can be like it's right here.
I know. I think one of the earlier pictures had it.
Well, you can,
okay. Yeah, that one you should be able to see it fairly well.
Okay. And where there was an opening. This is just a sealed up area, and this is the entrance into the rock storage area.
Okay,
so if this is the rock storage area that's lengthwise, okay, the air is coming in here, and then it turns and goes out here.
Okay, gotcha, like from that other diagram.
Yeah, that's really short.
Yeah, right. The air is not contacting the rocks well. Mm-hmm. Okay, and this is the entrance into the rock storage. That's this, and this is the air.
Number two is the manhole.
Elevation.
Yeah, number two is the manhole on the.
Right there. Okay, this is the number one. This is the solar panel. Where the air comes in.
And here we've already reinstalled a tarp to constrict that opening because we were anticipating the airflow to be relatively low. So we constricted that opening to give us higher readings. And you'll see a little bit more about that, but.
That's 1 foot, one by one.
Do you recommend keeping that on there to decrease the velocity? Because actually, when you decrease the, you guys talk about the
Next.
Okay, and this is just a cutaway view showing the rock storage area with respect to the where it is in the building. So. Okay. This is on the east side of the building. And it's like the building is cut in half. Okay, so the air comes through here, and...
Oh, this is...
And it would be going out of the... that dusting into the rest of the building.
Okay. So this is showing where we installed sensors for the data that you'll see. So that first location, that's a pyranometer, our solar radiation sensor, is located just above these panels.
Is it still there, by the way?
It is still there.
Okay.
Yes, all of them are still in place. Number two is that air velocity sensor, and that's measuring right at the connection from the air panels into the rock storage area.
That's where it was restricted.
Exactly.
Right. Okay, great. We'll have pictures of that too.
So behind the air collecting panels, we have a temperature sensor. We have a temperature sensor located at number four within the rock storage. They had vertical pipes, so we were able to drop one down into the middle portion. And then the fifth temperature sensor is inside one of the rooms.
You might want to be specific about that, you know, the pipe going down so far, whatever the distance is. And give credit to whoever made this beautiful drawing. Who did this?
Well, I utilized the SketchUp model from the previous.
Oh, so maybe give credit to the
So I modified it and cover section of it. And
they adapted from, yeah,
exactly.
The who did it?
Who did Andrew Fox.
Okay. Pardon me?
Andrew Fox.
Andrew, so give him credit.
Okay.
It's important to give credit to you.
Okay, and this is, well, this is.
Okay, so here's some pictures showing a little bit more detail of where these are located. So that a solar radiation sensor above the panels up there. Here you can see both that air temperature sensor, which is what is suspended in the middle. We use some wire to suspend it in the middle of the opening. The temperature sensor runs back and is attached to the 2x4 right behind the air panel. In the picture to the right, more in the center, you can see, you know, those pipes that are sticking up, and we're dropping that temperature sensor down into the pipe. So that's how it works.
Is that a person, a real person?
That's Cheryl.
That's Cheryl? He doesn't look like Cheryl.
Let it work out.
Cheryl's in Weight Watchers. I couldn't tell if you had put an imaginary person in there. That's really Cheryl. You had to brighten it so you could see everything. Is that why she...
Well, we just kind of washed out Cheryl's
okay. I think she wanted to see. She didn't want to be recognized on everyone. Okay. Everyone dressed up as Cheryl.
And then yeah. You know, the third temperature sensor is inside the room. It's actually around the corner there, but basically giving us a reading inside of that main room.
And that as well is still there. All your sensors that you're discussing.
All the sensors should still be in place.
Okay.
And if it's logging, maybe there's data.
It's definitely logging.
Okay.
It's just not being sent to us for
you. Okay. So here's another look at that, the data that came from those sensors. So we can see the solar radiation, how that fluctuated. The top temperature, the top thicker line that's almost horizontal, that's our temperature in the occupied space.
Yep.
Then the temperature of the rock storage stayed completely constant, and it's a little bit below 60. And then we've got a label that needs corrected. This one is actually the temperature in Fahrenheit exiting the collectors. So you can see the collector, the air coming from the collectors at this time was down around 40. So it, at that time, it was not effectively heating the air to a point where it was usable. It was actually cooling the air. It was cooler than the room temperature, so it would have been better if we could close that or reduce it so that the air would heat up more before it came across. Down below, we have some exterior temperatures for Oxford, Michigan that we correlated to these times. So those were the times that we had data for. It was a few miles away, but that was the closest data we could find.
And give your source.
Yes. The bottom, at the bottom we see a bunch of measurements that are listed as voltage, and these are from the air velocity sensor. So this is the data as it came, you know, as we received it. It was from basically between 0 and 5 volts, and that's what it looked like. We'll talk about that in just a moment. Go ahead.
And before you move on, can you eventually translate that to air velocity and show that rather than the voltage?
That's what we'll move on to after the next slide.
Oh, okay, but I mean, you might want to put it. Okay, go ahead.
So this is just highlighting, you know, what we spoke about before, where we're seeing the solar radiation and we're seeing the, you know, the correlation between the temperature. So I've highlighted those two. The temperature behind the existing, behind the air collectors. And you can see how there's a general correlation that, yes, it is warmer when the sun is out. And if you look at the the air temperature, the exterior air temperature, we're not seeing, you know, a strong correlation there. So it does appear that, you know, that temperature change is related to the sun being out. However, it's not sufficient, you know, it's not heating sufficiently to be of use to us at that time. Next slide. So this is looking at that air velocity data. So as we look at this, the calibrated range of the sensor is from 0.15 volts to just under 4 volts. That translates, you know, when you scale it up from about 30 feet per second, feet per minute, to 985 feet per minute. So, you know, unless we're seeing some sort of problem with the sensor, then we're seeing a lot of air movement flowing through there, far beyond what we would anticipate from just the natural convection of that. So this is where we got a little suspicious. Like, why are we getting that much air moving through that area?
I'm going to agree with you that there's some sort of calibration issue described because the high heat comes from the lows. And the time frame that's happening is so close together that there's some sort of calibration issue or it's not outed correctly. There's something that's causing the problem.
It looks very suspicious, though. It really does. That's an awfully high reading. Could you physically...
When we mounted the sensor, we could feel that air was moving. And really, 900 feet per minute, you're talking... Well, it's a decent jog. You're talking running across a football field in a minute. So, you know, it's not that... You know, people do six-minute miles, and you know, those are four laps around. So it's really not that outrageous of a speed. But
it sounds pretty high when you don't have a blower.
Exactly. But with a system that should be essentially closed, why are we seeing spikes that high? One of the things that either we're seeing something odd with the sensor and the calibration, or... Since we did experience that, yes, there was a significant amount of air moving at that time. When Brent was out there collecting the data, he mentioned that, you know, it was fairly gusty that day. One of the items that we want to have someone look closer at is that duct that's going out that we suspect might be leading to the chimney. A fair amount of air was being drawn out of there. I mean, it was a significant amount of air moving. And since it was a gusty day, we may be seeing that connection drawing air through the system. So, you know, these may be fluctuations largely based on the wind gusts outside.
Realistically, you're only talking about 30 feet per hour.
Well, 13 miles an hour is a lot faster than 1,000 feet per minute. So,
well, no, it's roughly,
isn't it?
No, 1,000 feet is going to be about 112. I mean, at your peak, you're looking at 1,000 feet.
But I mean, you know, it's not like it's staying up there. We're getting all sorts of odd gusts because it drops down and it goes up. So,
could it be noise? You know, you're using coaxial cable. And the wires, they're well insulated, so you're not going to get noise added on?
We have, the sensor has about 3 feet or so of wire, so we're going to have the voltage information being transferred there, analog information. There's not
only 3 feet.
There's 3 feet or so, and then we get to the voltage input adapter. The device that translate that signal from an analog signal to a digital signal.
Because I've run into in doing strain gauging pipes for blasting, the noise was actually larger than the values that we were measuring. Yeah. So we couldn't really see, you know, what was in there, for example. So
take it from cathode that this is an area where you're not having a lot of electronic energy or other industrial
that's
operations
true.
That was going on.
Right, that's all. Yeah, there's really...
And very short distance, too.
Short distance, that it's voltage. Now, we are exceeding the amount of cable connected according to the manufacturer's specification.
3 feet?
No.
Oh, excuse me.
Of the data cable?
Yeah.
So, they have a limit of, was it what?
100 meters.
100 meters?
Which is 300 feet. 300 feet? Okay, we're maybe not. So, we're probably not exceeding that. But, yeah. Obviously, there may be a calibration issue. That's why we said we don't know if this is coming from a sensor logger issue or if we're actually seeing large fluctuations in airflow.
We only have one airflow here.
Right.
Yeah. Was it a real expensive item?
Yeah, it was about $260 for the airflow.
We need more money. We need more instrumentation.
But then we also had to buy the power supply for that one and that input
adapter.
So we're pushing $400 on that piece of equipment.
Clint said that Troy, his wife, is a line writer.
Really?
And he's pretty resourceful when it comes to finding money, and that's kind of what he's doing.
Cool.
I think that's kind of how you get the job.
That
was
good.
Yeah.
And she's also on the board.
He's working towards getting more funding for things like this.
Great. Would any of you be interested in working on a grant as a consultant? Especially those of you who already are graduate students. It might be a good opportunity. I'll keep in touch.
In May.
In May. Nothing till May. That's when you finish, right?
Good for you. So some of the recommendations that we had regarding this duct system is you're going to have to get it back into an operable state before you can really evaluate it. We got to close some of these unintended openings that are throughout the system. We got to find out where that blower fan should be and get it reinstalled before you can decide if the system is working. You have to have the components. Now you can probably reevaluate this system, operating it manually to see if you're getting enough heat. Eventually you're going to want to either salvage or replace whatever automated controls to get the entire system, but you can probably manually operate it in order to determine if the other components are in place. And also they're planning on replacing that supplemental heat. The system is intended. If we get a month of cloudy days in the winter, which happens here, then solar air is not going to collect enough for you, so that's definitely going to be an item that they need to work on. So once you've addressed those items, then start looking at, we then need to cut down whatever trees are necessary to get adequate light to the system to make it function. And then, once you've done those, then you can actually evaluate if the system's operating properly before you really start changing panels and getting into heavy construction of removing and swapping out pieces. Okay?
All right. So with the goal of actually getting some energy analysis software working, we did an energy audit, and this is all of our totals. So we went room by room. We checked every device, all of the electrical properties, and then from there we interviewed Cliff on every single piece of equipment and device, how often he uses it and whatnot. And these are the calculations we came up with. So then from there, we used a DTE bill that was for September, last September, and they used 244 kilowatt hours a month. And we did the calculations, and we came up with about a 6% difference than DTE had. So
that's pretty good.
Yeah.
Pretty close, but
I think it's very good. I think it's very good. Yeah, that's actually excellent. And so 94% of agreement. Wow, I'm impressed.
And this is just kind of like a breakdown of the ratios in each room, how many devices there were for how many wattages were used. Not kilowatts.
So.
Opening
kilowatt
hours?
No,
or
kilowatt
hours. Down at the bottom we have the units. So.
Watt hours a day. Wow.
Did you ask them at all, like when, what time of the day you have to start using lighting systems? What I was trying to figure out is how often do they use with the daylight?
A lot of the things, some of the information we collected was on a month basis, some of it was a daily basis, and we just averaged it out throughout the days of the year.
Yeah,
so we didn't really say what time exactly.
I can't remember
the things. Well, he did tell us, like, as far as the heating, well, you know, what the operating hours were, the start and end time, so that that could be correlated to an energy software. So before the electrical, I'm sorry, for the electrical, it wouldn't matter. It was just the total amount of electricity he was put.
And to make a point, the office actually had the most electric
in red.
Yeah, by far. And it all came from the desktop. That's good. The desktop's taking out the most power. And then the next one is just the basement. Ratio to the basement. This is just a breakdown of the major rooms, how we did it exactly. Our tables, so. Like, this is the office, you can notice right up here.
I think they recently changed out some of the fluorescent light. It might be nice to indicate the. Was it T, whatever the value was?
T12.
T12, to save that in there. And then when the next group can look at data on the new lights and see the differences. So why don't you specify, you know, what exactly is it, just saying ceiling lights for us?
It is. There's notes that go with each item.
Oh, yeah.
There are.
Okay. And that's included in our report. So,
wonderful.
Yeah,
wonderful.
That's why. So each item has a individual number indicating where it is and what item it is.
Next one's just the thought everybody be a little interested in the battery closet. No? So,
396. Were they able, one of the goals was to try to find out how much electricity was coming from the wind generator and how much from the TV. Were we able to get to that point, or is that one of the areas that we need to work more on?
That's one of the areas that we need to work more on.
Yeah,
okay.
The current transducers still need to be installed.
Do we need additional transducers? Or those some of the ones you gave me?
No, I think we have enough.
Okay. That needs something that should come on. I'm not sure who makes it.
Yeah, that's
good.
Okay. Come in there.
Okay, we did a software evaluation. We were trying to determine what would be a good software to upgrade from the Energy 10 because the Energy 10 is very restrictive. Our goal was to use Energy Plus because that is the state-of-the-art software. It is free. Unfortunately, it's very difficult to use. There are some interface softwares that work with it because of the majority of the problem is getting the data into the program. So we tried a number of softwares. I think all of these are softwares that worked with Energy Plus. And there is a new one. This, the IDF editor, is new. When I went online onto Energy Plus website, this is something that they just added at the end of November. So this is supposed to be a graphical interface that to help people use the software. I did try ESPR. I wasn't able to get that to work. It does model rock storage bins. It seems like the free softwares are the difficult ones to use. We can't get them to run. So is demand, what is the, is that other one on there?
No, I just said I cut them short. We have a demand. Whole, we have a more extensive list as well in the report.
There is a software that is, that I would recommend. It is extremely expensive. But it all, if you get the top of the line of it, I think it runs like $4,000 or $5,000. But a student gets a 90% discount, and a university gets a 50% discount. It will model airflow. That would definitely be the one.
So a student can get a 90%?
Computational fluid dynamics.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That would be
the one to get. And it works, it works seamlessly with Energy Plus.
Great.
So, and also it indicates that it's easy to use.
What is the name of that?
You have it in your design builder?
Design builder, I think. Yeah. On the report I have different softwares highlighted. I think in yellow is
part of the first one on the list.
Yeah, I was trying to get that. That's all.
IDF editor, what was it you said about that one? It was good. This is
an actual utility of Energy Plus, and it's new. I think it just came out the end of November, so we didn't try that. So,
but you didn't really get into any into depth in analyzing other than the energy TAM that you had done earlier, right?
Yes, we couldn't get Energy Plus to work or ESP.
There just wasn't enough time to really get into it.
Well, yes, and we had all the software, and we had another one on there is Open Studio, which works with Google SketchUp,
okay.
So that you just take that model and you just tell it to run. But there are some strange things happen.
I want to say you need to put values on every single material or something because it was very difficult to work with. Oh, you had to enter a lot of data, and it had to be very specific, is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Unlike Ecotech, which you were batches of our values, are doing.
Some default.
Let me say, macro, where this you really need micro. Is that kind of what you're telling me? To get good data, you have to be very specific. Right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but if you have a good interface, that software that would provide you with some default values, then at least you can see, okay, yes, it is running. Now I just go and change this, and this.
Right. So. Did you talk to Kirsten Lyons at all about that?
Mm-hmm.
She's using Energy Plus, isn't she, right now at Green Garage?
Oh, we talked
to her earlier in the semester.
Yeah, about.
She's saying she's getting into it.
Talk to her to follow up on that. Because she's become kind of their expert for doing that.
Actually, I think that was EP Quick, I think, or...
She's at Kristen?
No, not EP Quick. Let me
see. Okay, you have it in the report.
Yeah, it's in the report.
Yeah, don't worry.
But that one, the one that she had talked to me about, it doesn't work with Energy Plus, and I just think it's really good if the university uses whatever the... state-of-the-art software is, so.
Make sure to try to be very specific in your presentation to Joe Greiser, especially since he's in charge of the money for us. So if you can make a really strong case for that and really recommend a specific type, we'll be more likely to get it.
Okay.
So.
And these were additional activities, just the electrical energy, the modeling. We also looked up weather data sources. There's information on somebody sneezing.
Sneezing again.
Yes, yes. And then.
Going to get a nickname.
Awesome. Green roof with different areas and solar radiation data.
I feel like a dwarf.
I feel like a dwarf.
That's easy.
Sun coming in,
okay.
You can take that heat. You know, he said that you could reduce the panel. If you're just heating the building, you could use a smaller panel. That excess heat, you drive into those rocks,
okay.
Warm those rocks up, and then you know, you have enough to supply your building. And then as the night goes on, when those air panels aren't going to actively be collecting any more heat, you can use the heat that you stored in those rocks. Circulate your air through the rocks into the building.
And that's going to happen naturally, right? Like there's no switch you have to do with that natural and the hot air stop blowing.
That was the blower fan that was disconnected, all those components that were disconnected. So there's a number of sensors that were simply disconnected that went back to central system somewhere. And it would determine, okay, changes these dampers around, turns the fan on, does what it needs to do. And all that control equipment was disassembled.
Mm-hmm. Also,
I'm sorry, what prevents the system from working first? What prevents it from the rocks heating this fluid and the fluid going back to these panels and being just released into the night air?
Well, there's dampers in certain locations of the system. So that those components and equipment would close dampers inside the ducts to stop airflow between portions, but it's disconnected.
There's some ways you can do that. For example, if you have some wire, guys know what wire cloth is? Okay. It's like wire that's made into, think of a wire fence with a chicken wire, a finer fence. You have it at an angle, and you put something that's very lightweight on it. When it's going the correct direction, it's going to blow that off and go through, but then when it wants to suck it back, it would hold it down. It acts like an automatic damper. In a sense, so just one thing that you might consider. It's kind of awkward here because you have things coming in from the side.
Yeah.
Unless you bend that into something that you could do, vertical sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah. The way the system is set up, even if it's everything is closed off, you're only going to get the top surface of the rock, the air contacting just the top surface of the rocks. But if they were to redirect the air, well, there's a number of ways that you can operate the rock bin. Okay, assuming you have a vertical rock bin, say that table right there. The air, you can have the air flow in here, and you would want the air to flow out here, and you'll contact the full volume of the rock. You can have it come in here and go out this way. You won't get as much heat from that. Going this way, you're going to have a larger pressure drop because you have to force that air through there, and that's going to require, more horsepower of the motor to get that through there. Another way is that you can have it enter from the bottom and come out the top. So if we could pressurize that open area that's under the rocks and force the air in there, and it will still need to be pumped, and close that off, then and bring that hot air in there, then that air would rise naturally through the rocks and then have it go out. They get more efficiency.
Typically, when they do rock storage, they use like egg-sized rocks, and they're pretty uniform. This was designed fairly early, and they just used found rocks. Okay, so there it may be.
They
may be harder to. You may get a greater pressure drop trying to go through there rather than regular size. You know, when you have pretty even sized rocks, you would have the more interstitial.
Well, the rocks that we saw were fairly uniform.
Were they?
Probably.
Okay. Yeah, about one and a half.
Between, I'd say, 3/4 to 1.5.
Okay, a little bit smaller than the egg size, you know. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So.
Interesting. Any other
comments, questions? Yeah, I have a question that covered the vents in the floor where the heat comes up through.
Oh, yeah, we were going to show a picture of that.
Cliff had a that
was the camera switch, or yeah. So if it's too hot, you just break the camera over. Have you looked
at anything, solution
vents, or automating it? We, that
opening is actually simply a hole in the top. And it works.
Well, it's not going to let you to direct the heat where you want it. So I didn't get a chance to look real closely to see if there's screw holes from something that may have been there. There may have been a damper down at the bottom of that to close it off, you know, automatically with the system. Again, you know, miscellaneous wires running, some of them cut off. I couldn't tell if there was a piece of equipment that had been removed.
There was one picture where you said there was a string to open and close the dampers. Did you follow where that string went to? Is it still attached to something?
It goes up inside of a duct inside of a wall. We could not find where it went from there.
Okay. So a camera to go in this would really be valuable.
Then, yeah, we might be able to find where that string goes and determine if it is somewhere still operable.
Ask Steve if he's having problems if he has to get to work or something. We should have him. He just went out the door. Does he need to get back to work again? Or is he already gone?
Steve?
Not going.